Welcome to the Luke Macias Show. Guys, a ton has happened in the last week. I know during the regular session, I come to y'all twice a week, and that is kind of necessary at that point because you just need more information and it's kind of hard to go Wednesday to Wednesday. There's too much stuff happening on a daily basis. That's not normal for 30 days after an election, but when we have the type of election we had on Super Tuesday, followed by the type of runoffs that are shaping up and the desperation of House leadership, it just makes for a lot more news. And then throw in the charges against Ken Paxton being dropped and Tom Oliverson entering the speaker's race. There's just a ton going on. We're going to break it down for you this week. Let's get to the show. Yesterday, an announcement was made, and it had been a rumored announcement in the press going into the weekend that Ken Paxton's felony charges that these prosecutors were trying to peg him with were being dropped, likely. And they were going to be dropped in a mediated settlement agreement where the attorney general is going to agree to some community service, a fine. And what is the other thing? Community service, a fine. Oh, and like a legal ethics class he has to take. So these three things that he's going to do in this mediated settlement agreement, this is not a plea deal. He did not plead to anything. His lawyers and the attorney general himself said, I am not guilty. I never will be guilty. For 10 years, this has hung over his head. And there's so many things to talk about to break this down. But before we get into the details of the last 10 years, I want to talk about and show you how Dustin Burroughs and Jared Patterson and Greg Bonin and Dade Phelan and all these guys used these security fraud charges to justify their sham impeachment. So we're just going to start off with a clip from Jared Patterson on this podcast with Jason Whiteley. Let's just go to the clip real quick.
I mean, look, I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of this year that, you know, Ken Paxton's on an island somewhere cashing out his campaign account and, you know, trying to skirt law enforcement. I think the best case
scenario. You think scenario, he would take off? I mean, literally, you think he'd take off?
He's facing life in prison. I mean, these securities fraud charges are, I mean, it's real deal. I mean,
but
it's
you federal. Think the attorney stuff. General is a flight risk.
I absolutely do. I mean, look.
So these guys, it is not something that started 3 or 4 months ago when that podcast took place, or even like, I think that podcast was, I don't know, 6 weeks old, 8 weeks old. This has been going on for 9 years, and people go around and they say, this guy could be in prison for life. And I actually think that nobody broke it down as well as incoming State Representative Mitch Little, who was also Ken Paxton's attorney involved in this securities case, as well as his attorney during one of his attorneys during the impeachment trial. So let's read this X thread that Mitch Little posted. Because I really think it's important for each and every one of y'all who don't maybe have all the background. A lot of listeners to this show are people who maybe just tuned into politics over the last like couple years as it was going on. But you don't realize that this has been happening for a very long time, almost a decade. So let's read this thread. So you think you like politics. Imagine a local judge pushing to have you indicted for a crime the local DA refused just because you won an office you weren't supposed to win. The judge hires two rock star defense lawyers to headhunt you at an illegal pay rate. He engineers the appointment of an out-of-town judge to take the case. The case is brought by your longtime political rival as the alleged victim. So the case is like this guy who hates Ken Paxton. Yeah, he's the victim of Ken Paxton's crime. Together with the imprimatur of a Texas Rangers investigation, the judge transfers the case and railroads you to a politically hostile county 4 hours away, then refuses to get off the case as the law requires. You have to appeal to throw him off. One of the charges is preempted by federal law, but you can't get the new judge to rule on it. The other charges were thrown out by a civil judge on the same facts, but you can't get the judge to rule on them either. You wrestle several different judges who will not rule for 9 years while the prosecutors chase their illegal pay through the state's entire court system. Your lawyers are under a gag order and can't talk about any of it. While this transpires, every article in every media outlet follows your name with, comma, who is facing 99 years in prison for charges of securities fraud. Literally thousands of articles from AP to local news. State legislators call you a, quote, sophisticated criminal, end quote. Then, thanks to an actual trial setting and the pay issue being resolved, everyone comes to their senses and brings the matter to a close. Enemies on the right cope and seethe. Enemies on the left tear their clothes and put on ashes and sackcloth. If you can't see the problem with all of this, then God help you. This was the 21st century's magnum opus of lawfare, and it ends today. Now I want you to imagine what you would do once set free from this nightmare. That's what's coming. We are in the preamble of reform in the great state of Texas, and there will be a proper accounting. You can go, if you do not follow Mitch on X, you need to. It's definitely worth, he's worth a follow. He's going to be one of the most consequential incoming new members in the Texas legislature. And that's a big statement, since there are so many consequential new members of in the Texas legislature who are coming in, who I believe are going to make a massive, massive difference for the state of Texas. These guys have worked their tail off to get here. And you can see that the momentum behind reform is palpable. And that's probably a good intro to Tom Oliverson's announcement for speaker. I was actually at the Texas Public Policy Foundation's policy orientation when a friend of mine sent me a screenshot of where Tom Oliverson's announcement was going to be. And it was that morning. Nobody knew he was announcing. And all of a sudden, people on Twitter were saying, hey, I just got a text about a press conference at 10 a.m. And that text seems to have gone out to more like Texas media people so that they could attend the press conference. But it happened to be just a couple stories up from where the policy orientation was, there at the AT&T Center, conference center right down the street from the Capitol. So I said, okay, well, let's go up. There were a couple elected officials around and a couple candidates. And so we just waltzed on up to the third floor just before 10 a.m. and Tom Oliverson got up. And I thought about playing his announcement speech for y'all. If you haven't watched it, I did post it to my Twitter or X profile. You can go watch it there. I would highly recommend it. He does cover a lot of ground in it, and a lot of very important ground. The important thing to understand about Tom Oliverson is that this is not just any old chairman in the Texas legislature. He is the chairman of insurance. That is a very powerful committee. It's a very sought after committee. And as chairman of insurance, he is somebody who's considered not in the inner circle of Dade. So your inner circle of Dade feeling are people like Will Metcalf, Morgan Meyer, Todd Hunter, Dustin Burroughs, Greg Bonin. These are like your inner circle. Cody Harris is definitely inner. So you have this kind of super close circle, and then you have the next round. And then right under them are people like Tom Oliverson, who are on powerful committees, who are tasked with a lot of legislation to carry, who are entrusted by the speaker to carry a lot of legislation. And I had not engaged with Tom Oliverson substantially until this last session when he was tasked to carry the ban on gender modification, the bill that Stephanie Click had killed the year before. And so he, on the House side, teamed up with Donna Campbell on the Senate side and carried this legislation to fruition. And I will say that through that, one of the things that became relatively clear is that Tom Oliverson is willing to work with anybody on either side, be they Democrat or Republican, within the Republican Party, be they moderate or conservative, to try to see legislation through to fruition. And he did that with the ban on gender modification. There were a lot of people pulling him in different directions. And that bill ultimately not only passed, but passed in a form that was strong enough to actually end those most horrific practices on children in the state of Texas. So Tom announced, and he said some very important things. In his announcement, he said that the voters had sent a clear message that they wanted a new direction for the Texas House. Now, for some of you, this seems like an obvious statement. You're like, well, that's not very consequential if somebody says that. My disagreement with you is that I don't think you realize how much the Texas House has tried. Let's say this. I don't think you realize how many Dade Phelan loyalists are still trying to bury their heads in the sand when it comes to the message that many of you sent them on election night. So it is very encouraging when people like Tom Oliverson say the voters have sent a clear message. They want a new direction in the Texas House. Because that is true. That is the message that y'all sent on election night. And I pray the message that grassroots Texans continue to send with some of these runoff elections, which we'll get to in just a little bit. But Tom Oliverson said, the voters sent a clear message. They want a new direction. It's not just that they want a new person. And this is going to be an important distinction. You see, Dade Phelan and Dustin Burroughs and Dennis, and Greg Bonin and Dennis Bonin and all of these guys, they're going to try to figure out how do we get a new person with the same culture? That's what they're trying to figure out right now. How do we elect a new person with the same culture? And what that requires is that requires for them to find somebody who looks enough like a new person, but who's loyal enough to them to keep the same culture. Cody Harris was probably their first choice. And then the Texas Scorecard actually reported on the fact that Cody Harris has business relationships with Dade Phelan and Dennis Bonin, like works for them at the bank. That seems like a bit of an issue. You don't want, it's like, hey, yeah, we're going to get a new speaker. The one that has a W-2 job for the old speaker and the speaker before him. Okay. Well, that doesn't seem like a new speaker. So the shine wiped off of Cody Harris. And so now they're like, okay, I think Brad Buckley is probably their next bet. That's what I've kind of thought since election day. He is a Jordan Berry client. And so if you understand the consulting wars and all these various things, Murphy Nasica, which is Matt Brownfield primarily, there's other people, but Matt Brownfield, Murphy Nasica, and then Jordan Berry are kind of Dade's top two consultants. And so if you're a top cardinal in that set, you want to figure out how to keep all of your powerful positions in place. So they're going to try to find somebody within their own group. So Brad Buckley is a Jordan Berry client. He is seen as a little nicer than Dustin Burroughs or Greg Bonin or Cody Harris. But as if he was speaker, he would probably just keep everybody else in place, right? The same power brokers stay the same power brokers. The same bullies are empowered to bully. The same people who demean everyone, hey, are encouraged to keep demeaning their fellow legislators. So they're likely looking at somebody like Brad Buckley, and they're going to try to do as little as they possibly can. So maybe Democrat chairs, they just think, okay, we can't, the train's left the station. We have to move on that one. And the parliamentarians might have to get fired because, like, we got to fire them. But there's a big difference between somebody who's saying, I'm going to fire the parliamentarians because he thinks they have to get fired, and somebody who's saying, we need new parliamentarians and here's all the reasons, which is what Oliverson laid out in his speech. I personally anticipate 6, 7, or 8 people trying to run for speaker. And a number of them could be reform-minded, and a number of them will be fighting to keep the status quo while trying to communicate as many small reform one-liners as possible to maintain the speakership under the current hierarchy. So Tom Oliverson announces, he says the people have sent a message. He says that the parliamentarians put their thumb on the scale. One thing he said, which really hasn't been talked about a lot since the session, is that the Texas House intentionally delays as much as possible. That's really important to kind of talk about as we go into next session, where we would hope to accomplish a lot more conservative policy. The Texas House, by design, slows the process down as long as possible. They appoint committees as late as possible. All of these things are designed to drag on and drag on and drag on. So I think Tom's willingness to talk about the delay tactics, to talk about how Democrat chairs are problematic, and not just that, you know, you could see the media in front of him just going like, oh my gosh, like this guy's saying everything that conservatives have been saying. So one of the reporters said, can you give me an example of a Republican priority that died in a Democrat committee? Because remember, the media are basically talking heads for Dustin Burroughs and Greg Bonin and Dade Phelan, okay? They know the one-liners that these guys are using, and they're just spouting them out. Can you name one Republican priority that died? And so Tom answered that question incredibly well. And this is what, you know, so many conservatives have said for a long time. It's not about one priority. Dennis Bonin did kill a lot of Republican priorities with Democrat chairs. The heartbeat bill, constitutional carry. But Dade Phelan shifted where he said, I'm not going to have a Democrat chair kill a Republican priority, but I am going to give them a lot of power that they will use to kill a lot of Republican bills and keep other conservative Republican members in check. So Tom Oliverson talked about the fact that when he carried the ban on gender modification, two bills that he was carrying, one that was like helping paramedics, was in a Democrat committee. And the chairman of that committee killed his bill to punish him for passing a ban on genital mutilation. So imagine you're a state representative. Maybe you have a paramedic in your district that came to you and said, hey, my statewide association is trying to reform this thing that really affects me in a negative way in state law. Would you carry this? And so you carry the bill and you're a doctor and you're meeting with the paramedics and you're meeting with people in your district and you're meeting with different stakeholders and you're trying to work this bill. And this is not a super partisan bill. Okay. I can't say that because I don't even know what bill Tom Oliverson is talking about. But let me just say this. I've yet to see a paramedic bill that was super partisan. So, I mean, maybe for what it's worth, I haven't seen any paramedic bills that, you know, red and blue just separated and threw stuff at each other over. So let's assume this is a bipartisan bill that's not really controversial. And you're working it through the process. And all of a sudden, a Democrat chair comes and says, hey, stop fighting on all these Republican priorities you're pushing. And if you do, these other bills are going to die. And now you got to think like, well, this paramedic, he's actually like in my district and he talked to me. And these other people, they're relying on me. I've actually met these paramedics and their lives would be better if we passed this bill. So see, what Dade Phelan has done is he's created an environment where you have to count the costs of deciding to pursue conservative policy. And he knew he did that when he set it up. It was by design. Tom had a great answer. He talked about that. He shared that story and he said, this is my experience. And I'm telling you, a lot of other Republicans have the same experience. And so the Democrats are abusing that and using it as the leverage they would use it for to hurt Republicans who are fighting. And I think that that needs to change. I will tell you, an hour or two after Tom Oliverson announced, Dade Phelan was actually being interviewed by Spectrum News. And honestly, it is so funny to watch the entire interview, but I'm just going to play for y'all a very short clip of Dade talking about all these new conservative freshmen that are coming in. Okay. So I'm just going to play this clip real quick. It is so, it gives us just another good picture. Senator Nathan Johnson had a similar thing he had, right? We talked about this. And this is when you realize, like, Nathan Johnson, this liberal senator from Dallas, he has the same message to these incoming freshmen as Dade Phelan, Dustin Burroughs, Greg Bonnet. They all have the same message to these guys. Okay. So let's go to this clip.
Many of the incumbents that did lose re-election and some of the new people coming in, I mean, it is going to be a different chamber, a different house.
Sure.
How do you see that moving forward in terms of, you talked about, you know, this is a conservative chamber. Can it get more conservative?
I think it can get more conservative, no doubt about it. But, you know, here's the thing. You run for election and you come up here and you sit down in the committees and you have hours and hours and hours of testimony from constituents, and you start an understanding that this perspective is a little bit different. And I think House members in the House, here in the Texas House, which is the most deliberative body in this country, in my personal opinion, they will come and they will understand that, you know, what they ran on is one thing, but governing and understanding what they need to do for the people of Texas is entirely different.
America is at a crossroads. Now, more than ever, Texas must step up and lead the country. We don't have time to mess around. The only way to save America is with a strong Texas. You and I know this, but so do the enemies of life and liberty. Therefore, you and I have no choice but to stand up and fight. I'm Sarah Gonzalez, and to the enemies of liberty, I say, come and take it.
Campaigning is not governing. This is one of the most beloved statements from Dade and Dustin and Greg and this whole crew, guys. See, what you don't understand is, like, it's okay to campaign that you don't want to socially transition kids with transgender therapy. It's okay to say you want to sue doctors who cut the genitals off of a child. But here's the problem. When you get here, you realize you have to govern. And see, in governing, what you probably didn't realize when you said on the campaign trail, we're going to sue doctors who cut the genitals off of a child, you didn't realize that the largest PAC in Texas is Texans for Lawsuit Reform. And they have privately told everybody that they don't want to do that, that they don't like the idea of doctors getting sued for cutting the genitals off of children. So guess what? It was easy to say it on the campaign trail, but now that you got here and you hear from us, hey, the PAC with $30 million that spends a ton of it keeping us all here, they don't want us to do it, so we're not going to do it. Are you okay not pushing it anymore? Do you understand? Do you understand? I love how he's talking about, like, hours of testimony. Hours of testimony. So these guys are going around saying, hey, Dade Phelan killed a ban on China land ownership. The CCP can own our land. That's a problem. And according to Dade, well, I know you can campaign on it, and I know 95% of your district wants it. But when you get here, you're going to realize you got to govern. And there's a lot that goes into governing, and there's a lot of people that sell their property to CCP people and make a lot of money on it. And so you're going to hear hours of testimony because the Democrats are going to ship in a bunch of Chinese immigrants who don't even know what the law says. I mean, you had all these people that are American citizens that at one point have, like, China ancestry that were basically testifying going, this hurts me. And it was like, no, this bill says if you're a Chinese Communist Party member, If you're a member of the Chinese Communist Party, if you're from China, you're a citizen of China, you can't buy the land. If you're a company owned by China, you can't buy the land. These people testifying were citizens who could buy their own land. All they want. And they got shipped in by all these Democrats. And then all these Republicans are saying, man, they're going to call us racist if we say Chinese nationals can't buy our land. So see, what Dade is trying to say is, guys, I know you campaign on these things, but when you get here, you'll hear testimony. And we're going to tell you the kind of big power brokers that are against all the conservative policies you want. And then you're going to realize there's a big difference between campaigning and governing. That's what he's going to say. And this mindset will take over and it will infect someone. Okay. JC Jatan lost his election and he's one of those people that got infected with the Austin Swamp mentality. He made a speech on the House floor defending socially transitioning children. That's insane. It's insane. His bill was going to build out facilities that were going to get used to socially transition children. Tony Tinderholt said, we'll build all these mental health facilities as long as they don't do social transitioning of kids with transgender care. And JC said, no, we don't need to do that. Made a speech for it. The stakeholders have agreed this is fine as it is. Let's keep it. This is what happened. See, JC was convinced campaigning is not the same as governing. And now I'm governing. So now I have to oppose a policy that 90% of my district would support in a heartbeat. In JC's farewell message to his district, since he lost his reelection, here's a quote from it. He says, I tell them confidently, if I had known then, and I had a pretty good hunch that my vote to impeach a corrupt politician, he's talking about Ken Paxton, by the way, to impeach a corrupt politician from our own party would mean that I would lose my primary election, I would still do it every time. I stand before my wife, kids, and team proud and united in knowing that we did what was right for Texas. We wouldn't have it any other way. We didn't go to Austin to, quote, play the game, end quote. We went to serve Texans and make Texas an even better state to call home. So this is where you're also exposed to the total gaslighting of the Texas legislature, right? Like Nathan Johnson and Dade Phelan are like, guys, here's how you play the game. You got to separate what your voters want from what all of us want and the Uniparty wants. And then JC's going, I voted the Uniparty way because I didn't go there to play the game. They actually convince some of their colleagues that playing the game means voting with your constituents. And the way to stand up for a better Texas is to vote with the Uniparty in Austin. And that's JC's perspective. And so that's where we find ourselves here is the changing dynamics. The Speaker of the Texas House is basically saying, well, we've got kind of a plan to indoctrinate all these people while he's in a runoff that he knows he's in big trouble in. I mean, the speaker has fired Murphy Nassica. He's brought in this guy named Rob Johnson, who is Rick Perry's old advisor, David Dewhurst's old advisor, Glenn Hager's advisor. And now, you know, the Glenn Hager Dewhurst guy is coming in for the speaker. And going to try to help him survive. But as the momentum builds, understand that this institution, the Texas House, is going to be drug kicking and screaming to reform its practices to be an honest, open, deliberative body. Many members believe the lie. They've convinced themselves they're deliberative. Okay. So it's going to take a lot to get them there. And so just because a member you're talking to, if your state representative says, yeah, I know things need to change, you can't take it for granted. Like, they need their feet held to the fire all the way until they do the right thing. Because this institution is trying to figure out how to do the least amount possible to appease the populace and still maintain the status quo as much as they possibly can. The good news is, people who watch and listen to this show, donors, activists, elected officials, staff, operatives, we're not letting that happen. And I believe there is more unity in the Republican Party than ever before into ensuring that these vital reforms in the lower chamber take place. And there will be a lot more conversations that we have from now till the next session that evolve around or revolve around that subject. And I look forward to coming to you with them. God bless you, and God bless Texas.
Do you want to get your news from people who share your values? Texas Scorecard, real news for real Texans.
Thank you for listening to the Luke Macias Show. To find out more information about what's going on here in Texas, visit texasscorecard.com.